Thank you once again for tuning into the Psychedelic Podcast. It's Rob and Tina here with Antonio DiCunto, author of the audiobook Finding the God Spark, which you can find on all streaming platforms. How are you doing, Antonio?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. In your audiobook, you talk a lot about the trauma and the depression that you felt throughout your life, as we spoke about in our initial interview, and it's very interesting. Your audiobook is excellent, and I think you're really going places with it. You also talk a lot about, on your podcast, various trips on LSD. Can you please tell me why LSD worked better for you than any other type of psychedelic, such as mushrooms?
Actually, find solutions to problems I may be dealing with at the time. It's helped me through a lot of addiction problems. It's kind of got me over the party scene mentality, actually growing as a human and self-examination.
That's really good to hear. You have said to me before that you don't microdose, you macrodose. Can you explain for the audience what you define as macrodosing?
Macrodose for me would be 2-3 hits of LSD, 3 weeks to a month or so. And I would think of things throughout that time period that I really needed to work on mentally. Things that I noticed that I wasn't treating this person properly, or maybe I talked to someone in a way that I shouldn't have. You pretty much have no choice in the matter as far as it pulling away that veil that's over your eyes. You deal with the real issues and your own way of thinking and what matters and what doesn't. And I like that, coming out of it and feeling like I improved something and continue to get better and better. I think it makes you more introspective. That's just my preference. I do like macrodosing, but I also like microdosing, especially at work or something like that if I have a hard week coming. I would say doing it that way helped me break through a lot of image issues I had. I always walked around, you know, trying to maintain the tough guy cowboy image with my chest popped out, and always walking around with a whiskey bottle and trying to keep up appearances, and was always looking for a scrap whenever I went for a bar. Well, I wouldn't say really looking for a battle, but I was always ready for one. That definitely helped bring me down a few notches from that, and realizing that that's really not the way a man should behave. More of a image issue I had at that time. I prefer the results I've gotten from LSD to everything else. Usually every time I do it, I come out improving something.
The first time that I ever did acid, and every time that ensued after that, it was always a monumental, life-changing spectacle. And I had to reevaluate everything that I was doing in my life, every character defect. All my flaws came to the forefront, and it just really enlightens you and makes you realize everything you're doing wrong. Personally, I realized that the only thing that was important was love and connecting to other people, and that we all kind of share one body. When you have those interpersonal experiences with other people, you all kind of have a group enlightenment. And when other people can attest to that, it makes it even more fulfilling and more real. So I know what you're saying there with filtering out all of the fighting and anger, because I've been there too.
Antonio, do you consider yourself an addict when it comes to LSD, or do you have another perspective?
As far as these things being addictive, I know with plant medicines like ayahuasca, San Pedro, or mushrooms, I don't think that's really possible, because they're so harsh on the body. They smell bad, they taste bad, they make you puke. So I don't think it's possible to get addicted to those. Even in my party days, I was very aware that I was never actually addicted to the drug itself. I was more addicted to the social aspects of everything. For the first time, I felt I belonged in a group or a tribe. So I became addicted to that, but not the drug. Currently, especially using LSD, less is definitely more. I personally get more out of a lower dose, maybe 3-4 hits, maybe 5 at the most. I get quite a bit out of that. So right now I'd be admittedly addicted to the enlightenment. And I've been thinking about this for a while, as far as, are we born with an addictive personality, or is that something we acquire through early traumas? We're looking to fill that hole of pain with anything that brings a smile to her face? Or is that a natural thing? Am I just naturally going to get addicted to things that I take a big interest in?
That's probably a question that many people have every day. From my experience, depression can cause an addictive personality to go and seek out something to be addicted to, and it can work the other way as well.
Yeah, because you're looking for anything to temporarily alleviate a problem, so you want to just fill yourself up with a certain pleasure. And if it's instantly gratifying, then you just keep chasing that behavior. And so it loses its magic later down the road, and you realize you have to fill that with something else. And I'm speaking on that from personal experience as well. I know exactly what you mean. What is champagne? that makes it sound like the false pronunciation of champagne.
San Pedro?
San
Pedro was interesting. The visuals were very Native American-like. I saw a lot of, like, Indians with mohawks and tomahawks. But then when I took it on my own, this is one of the addictions I had, too. Like, I was pretty big into supplements. Test boosters, creatine, anything to help you gain muscle. I got a sense there was a teacher right next to me. You think that you need all these supplements to be a man, because you want to be strong, but all you have to do is put in the work. You don't need these supplements. They're actually harming your body. All that was going on in my head, and that kind of flips the script on that.
Do you think that the LSD is harming your body just like the supplements are? And do you ever plan to stop using LSD? Do you think that you've kind of reached sort of your self-enlightenment and gotten over your trauma and depression to the point where you can see yourself in 10 years not using it at all?
I would say that's definitely part of the 5-year plan. I've gotten quite a few insights, and I know there's things I still need to work on, and I need to realize, kind of break through some barriers I have set up. Problem is being aware of that, knowing that it's going to take some more work and getting through that, but I'm optimistic with the 5-year plan.
I know from personal experience that I would have all these great ideas, reevaluations of myself that I would be so eager to apply to my life immediately, but I would end up staying up all night and throughout the next day. And then I'd be so exhausted that it would put me in a depression to where I didn't have that desire or drive to do all the things that I realized that I need to do with my life. But I never tried microdosing. I wonder if that would be more beneficial in the long run. I know what you mean about the creatine, man. I took that in high school playing football. I was a small guy, and I blew up within a week. I gained like 14 pounds. It was crazy. It was called Celtec Hardcore. It like bloated my body up so much that I still to this day have these horizontal stretch marks on my back, and I hate it.
A lot of those companies put steroids into their stuff too, so that's something to be aware of. I kind of thought that might be an issue. There were sometimes the light switch came on a little bit too much and I was on all the time. Then I could feel that need. Maybe I should buy that again because I loved the feeling when I was on that. I'm just not sure if steroids were part of that mixture or what.
I'm not surprised by that at all because they put stuff in our food these days at fast food restaurants that have addictive substances in them. And they say that steroids are illegal and whatnot, and if you're a cyclist, you're not allowed to use them. But I think the air that we're breathing probably has some kind of addictive substance in it, too.
Some aluminum.
I actually looked into the water that I was drinking in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it said there was fluoride, arsenic. There was about 14 or 15 hazardous chemical materials in the tap water, so I don't drink tap water.
It seems like with all of this pollution in the air and the trails that they drop in the sky, it's almost like they're dumping the whole entire periodic table into the atmosphere.
If fluoride's been proven to have a negative effect on people, then why is it still in the water supply? It's already in the toothpaste. If you really want to fix teeth, then it's in the toothpaste. So why is it something we automatically consume all the time and have no choice in?
Yeah, it's horrible, but there is a reason behind it. My theory is that because fluoride is a chemical that hardens the liquid within your body, when you ingest fluoride, it actually hardens the liquids in your brain and makes you more susceptible to being sheeple.
It makes you docile. It calcifies your third eye.
So I had been doing some research and I saw that the use of psychedelics had really been outlawed in the 70s of all times, 1971, if I am remembering correctly. And I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, microdosing has been allowed in certain practices in different places in the United States. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, so I know here in Denver, Colorado, they took the step of actually decriminalizing mushrooms, so you're allowed to have them in your possession. I think Oregon is taking off in that direction. They have some things on the ballot to be considered for treatments. I know it's definitely becoming more and more popular with clinical trials as far as severe depression and PTSD, trying out psilocybin along with ketamine. I know there's some trials with DMT as well.
I remember in high school, one of my friends got pulled over coming back from an EDM show, a rave, with a whole bunch of tabs. And they were in Maryland talking about striking him with a year per tab. Going from that to no criminal punishment at all is so puzzling to me. Like, who is coming up with these laws?
Yeah. What do you define addictive behavior when it comes to the world of psychedelics? Because you stated that actually you don't feel any craving, but do you feel any type of withdrawals from LSD when you don't use it for an extended period of time?
No, I definitely never felt like I needed it to get through a day. A good example of someone who would probably be a guy I used to work with, and he knew I had it from time to time, and he would call me or text me at weird times, 2 a.m. or something, come knocking on my door and be so drunk out of his mind he could barely stand up, and he would ask if I had any hits for him or anything like that, and I'd be like, nah. Oh, it seemed like a big waste to give it to somebody like that. For me, I know psychedelics can break through certain things, but you have to want to break through those things. You know, if you're drinking and then you want to do it, you're not getting anything out of it if you're just drinking, dropping, and then playing video games and then passing out.
Sounds like a 15-year-old. Let's talk about ayahuasca then. Let's talk about your experience with that. Where was that? When was that? Tell us a story about it.
I believe it was November 8th, 2019, that I flew out to Iquitos, Peru. The person in charge of the retreat was Ron Wheelock. He is known as the Gringo Shaman. So he spoke English, so it seemed like a good place to go for my first time doing that. I was there for a week. It was 3 ceremonies. And then you could try other things like the San Pedro, which I tried, or Cambo was available. So we would do the ceremonies. We'd all drink this ayahuasca, which was basically just a shot of liquid. It was pretty weird for me. After the 4 or 5 hour ceremony inside the tent, which is called a maloku, you're listening to people, and it's kind of interesting. The start of it, you hear people getting sick, and then the heavy moans, like, ugh, and then the puking. You hear a lot of people go,
oh, thank you, or yeah, I see.
There was one guy in particular that was having a really bad time. His feet would just anxiously move up and down. He raised his arms up high like he was going down a roller coaster, and he would just scream as loud as he could. And it was a horrible experience for that dude, but talking to him later, kind of figured out his intention going in that was to rid the world of all murder and hatred, and he was tired of all the killing.
I've only heard of one other person that's done it. A friend of a friend, when I first moved to Virginia a while back, he lost his mind from, how do you take it? You just break open the cactus and there's some sort of liquid in there?
It's actually 2 different plants. One is a root, another one is a leaf. They combine it into a pot and boil it up and turn it into a liquid. You basically drink it like a shot. It doesn't taste very good. actually prefer that taste over San Pedro. San Pedro was pretty bad, at least the one I had.
This kid, he was an insomniac from taking too much ayahuasca. He was from Hawaii. And every time he would close his eyes, he would see women and children getting killed or burned. He would hear screaming. It would just be death. He was in that state permanently. And he was out of his mind. That was the most insane person I've ever met. And it was all because he took too much ayahuasca. Now he lives a nightmare every day of his life, if he's still alive.
A lot of people that have underlying mental health issues that really haven't been discovered yet, if they take LSD or any kind of psychedelic, well, not just psychedelics, cocaine, LSD, amphetamines, they can trigger symptoms of schizophrenia in people that are susceptible to that. And regular users of these types of drugs can sometimes experience traumatic flashbacks that can last for weeks, months, or even years after they stop using the drugs.
Yeah, I would say ayahuasca especially is not always fun. I faced something I really didn't care to, but I think it was necessary. That was pretty much how I dealt with my grandmother on her deathbed. During the third ceremony, I was faced with that. She looked like she stuck her finger in a light socket or something. Her hair was standing up like she got electrocuted. A big anime-looking demon came around with a big smile on his face and actually bit her head off. I remember thinking as a child what I was remembering at that time. I couldn't handle another relative dying so close to my mother's death, because my mom died when I was 12, and my grandmother passed away when I was 14. So I just wanted her to die quickly because I didn't know how to actually handle it. And that was something too, when I shared that with everybody in the circle, one guy came up to me later on and he came here looking a certain way, and you look like you're leaving with a big weight dropped off your shoulders. You look so much more relaxed and open to other people actually talking to you. That was a big benefit, especially if I was carrying that and I didn't even realize it.
After experiencing that moment that you had there when you were in Peru, is that when you started using LSD on a regular basis?
Actually, I stopped using it as often. I think one of the traits for ayahuasca is you feel like you're getting downloads in your brain probably a good month and a half after you get back.
Downloads, you said?
Brain downloads, like, this is wrong, you're doing this right, change this, change that. I might even say using LSD a lot less than I used to helped me get motivated to write my audiobook and get involved with the podcast, remove some of those blockades that I had set up.
That's amazing that you're able to overcome all that trauma. You said you had started your audiobook right after you got back from Peru.
I did the audiobook in this coronavirus shutdown, actually, when that started.
What are some main things that you'd like to tell the audience?
Psychedelics aren't for everybody. If you know you have history of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder or something like that, probably say they're not for you. The words you say have power over somebody else. One of the things I dealt with, those glances that I shot at people, maybe they just needed a smile. I was worried about maintaining my tough guy image. It gave them more of a scowl, get away from me or whatever. Maybe not getting that smile that day is the cause for them slicing their wrist or putting a gun to their head. So
that's a great point. Every little interaction, every little thought, anything that we internalize even has a ripple effect on everything around us. That's one of the things that I realized on LSD, and that's really important. Every little thing that I'm doing is affecting everybody. I know that a lot of the times when I did it wouldn't always be great because I didn't always know the quality of what I was getting. And there's all this talk about research chemicals and how they have all sorts of different effects on people. I had some great times and some horrible times, depending on the quality, I feel like. And the bad times were the result of ingesting research chemicals. So sometimes I would just see all visually stimulating things, but at the same time feel rotten. Sometimes it would be euphoric, But I think it all depends on your mindset going into it. Like, you create your own reality. And if you keep that positive mindset throughout, it can be a very revealing experience. The times that I went in with a bad mindset, it was terrible. It was a nightmare. I started to realize that later on. Would you say that it has a lot to do with the people you surround yourself with while you're doing it?
If I do it, I think about doing it on a certain day. That's usually my second day off. That first day is used to just clear everything out so I'm not around anybody and spend some time in meditation, especially before bed. Wake up with a clear mindset and what I want to accomplish at that time.
So you plan out when you're going to be having your next dose. Is there a reason for the dates that you plan it? Is there something that triggers you to want to utilize LSD on that specific day? Or is it just something that you feel you need to do that week?
So I usually save it for a celebration or something that is pretty significant throughout the week or month that I want to work on. When I was doing my audiobook, I made a commitment to myself not to use until I finished that. And I finished, I dropped a couple hits and thought I was going to have the best trip I ever had because I just accomplished something pretty big. The beginning of it was actually the worst trip that I had. I was feeling really sick. I wanted to puke. I wanted to puke myself from the inside out into the toilet bowl, flush the toilet, and then get flushed down with it. At one point, it was getting so bad, I'm like, be willing to be Satan's lapdog if it just stopped. As soon as I thought that, then I was shot off into outer space, and it ended up being one of the best trips I've ever had. I think it's important to let go of whatever ideas you have if you're clinging on to something or big and bad because you just got done with an audiobook. Maybe not so great after all, and we're going to knock you down a couple notches and make you remember how the ego gets in the way of true progress for enlightenment.
Based on what you just said about how you took a long break and then you felt that way initially, but then you were able to put yourself back into a positive mindset, and you said you see yourself not really having to use it at all in 5 years, and absolutely no judgment here. If you know that you can stop in 5 years and you accomplished your audiobook and then went back to using LSD again, what made you decide that you should do it again when you were on such a creative track?
If I see something I want to work on, maybe I could work on it on my own, but it'll take 5 to 10 years with LSD for me. It seems to be a massive shortcut to actually achieving. You can do a lot of years worth of therapy in one session of LSD use. I really do love feeling more enlightened. My consciousness just keeps climbing and climbing.
Do you think people that believe that they use the benefits of psychedelics should consult a doctor or a shaman or a guided professional first before they decide, I'm going to go ahead and just try this? Because your experience was different. You sort of tried it on your own and you got lucky, because a lot of people can just go straight into a psychosis, and I've seen a lot of cases like that. It's been a blessing for you, but it won't be for everybody. So what advice do you have to give to people that are curious about trying psychedelics?
There's enough trials going on. I think you could probably do it in a clinical setting if you're suffering from depression. I know a lot of doctors are actually looking for people that suffer from depression and PTSD right now, and they're doing many treatments. Yeah, my mindset was different when I started. Like yeah. I said, I lucked out. I got lucky. Instagram, you can find me at Finding the Gutspark. I'm listed on pretty much all the podcast sites right now. Spotify, Apple, Breaker, Google Podcasts.
Antonio, it was really good speaking with you. I hope you have an awesome evening and stay safe out there.
Antonio, it was really nice talking to you for the first time and kind of relating in some ways. It was a fun conversation as well as an important one. I hope we talk again soon, and best of luck to you with your podcasting and your audiobook.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to anything we do in the future.